If you find this hard to do daily, then at least do it whenever you can. I began to treat my belongings as if they were alive when I was a high school student. I had my own cell phone. Although the screen was still monochrome, I loved the compact design and pale blue color. I was not an addicted user, but I liked my phone so much that I broke the school rules and slipped it into the pocket of my school uniform every day. I would take it out occasionally to admire it and smile to myself. Technology progressed and everyone was getting cell phones with color screens. I hung on to my outdated model as long as I could, but finally it had become too scratched and worn, and I had to replace it. When I got my new cell phone, I hit upon the idea of texting my old phone. It was my first replacement, and I was probably feeling quite excited. After thinking for a moment, I typed the simple message, "Thank you for everything," and added a heart symbol. Then I pressed send. My old phone pinged immediately, and I checked my texts. Of course it was the message I had just sent. "Great! My message reached you. I really wanted to say thanks for all you have done," I said to my old phone. Then I closed it with a click. A few minutes later, I opened my old phone and was surprised to find that the screen was blank. No matter which button I pressed, the screen did not respond. My cell phone, which had never broken since the day I first got it, had gone dead after receiving my message. It never worked again, as if the phone, realizing that its job was done, had resigned from its post of its own accord. Of course, I know some people find it hard to believe that inanimate objects respond to human emotion, and it could indeed just have been coincidence. Still, we often hear about athletes who take loving care of their sports gear, treating it almost as if it were sacred. I think the athletes instinctively sense the power of these objects. If we treated all things we use in our daily life, whether it is our computer, our handbag, or our pens and pencils, with the same care that athletes give to their equipment, we could greatly increase the number of dependable supporters in our lives. The act of possessing is a very natural part of our daily life, not something reserved for some special match or contest. Even if we remain unaware of it, our belongings really work hard for us, carrying out their respective roles each day to support our lives. Just as we like to come home and relax after a day's work, our things breathe a sigh of relief when they return to where they belong. Have you ever thought about what it would be like to have no fixed address? Our lives would be very uncertain. It is precisely because we have a home to return to that we can go out to work, to shop, or to interact with others. The same is true for our belongings. It is important for them to have that same reassurance that there is a place for them to return to. You can tell the difference. Possessions that have a place where they belong and to which they are returned each day for a rest are more vibrant. Once my clients have learned to treat their clothes with respect, they always tell me, "My clothes last longer. My sweaters don't pill as easily, and I don't spill things on them as much either." This suggests that caring for your possessions is the best way to motivate them to support you, their owner. When you treat your belongings well, they will always respond in kind. For this reason, I take time to ask myself occasionally whether the storage space I've set aside for them will make them happy. Storage, after all, is the sacred act of choosing a home for my belongings. 5. The magic of tidying dramatically transforms your life. Put your house in order and discover what you really want to do. In Japan, the image of a class representative is someone who is popular, has leadership qualities, and likes to stand out, and we use the term class rep type for anyone with these qualities. In contrast, I am the organizer type, an eccentric who works away quietly and unobtrusively in the corner of the classroom, organizing the shelves. I mean this literally and quite seriously. The first official task I was given in elementary school was tidying. I can vividly recall that day. Everyone was vying for jobs like feeding the school pets or watering the plants, but when the teacher said, "Who would like to be responsible for organizing and tidying the classroom?" no one raised their hand but me, and I did so with great enthusiasm. In retrospect, my tidying genes were already activated even at that early age. From previous chapters, you already know how I spent my days at school, happily and confidently reorganizing the classroom, lockers, and bookshelves. When I share this story, people often say, "You're so lucky you knew what you liked at such a young age. I'm jealous. I have no idea what I'd like to do." But I actually only realized quite recently how much I like organizing. Although I spend almost all my time involved in tidying, either teaching my clients in their homes or giving lectures, when I was young, my dream was to get married. Tidying was such an integral part of my daily life that it wasn't until the day I started my own business that I realized it could be my profession. When people asked me what I liked to do, I would hesitate and then finally say in desperation, "Read books," all the while wondering, "What do I like to do?" I completely forgot about being assigned the role of class organizer in grade school. 15 years later, I had a sudden flashback while tidying my room. In my mind, I could see my teacher writing my name on the blackboard, and realized with surprise that I had been interested in this field since I was very young. Think back to your own school days and the things you enjoyed doing. Perhaps you were responsible for feeding the pets, or maybe you liked drawing pictures. Whatever it was, the chances are that this is related in some way to something that you are doing now, as a natural part of your life, even if you are not doing it in the same way. At their core, the things we really like do not change over time. Putting your house in order is a great way to discover what they are. One of my clients has been a good friend of mine since college. Although she originally worked for a major IT company after graduating, she discovered what she really likes doing through tidying. When we finished putting her house in order, she looked at her bookcase, which now contained only those books that captivated her, and realized that the titles were all related to social welfare. The many books she had bought to study English or hone her computer skills after entering the workforce were gone, while those on social welfare, which she had bought as a junior high school student, remained. Looking at them, she was reminded of the volunteer work she had done as a babysitter for many years before entering the company. Suddenly, she realized that she wanted to contribute to building a society where parents could work without feeling anxious about their kids. Aware for the first time of her passion, she spent the year after my course studying and preparing, then quit her job and started a childcare company. She now has many clients who rely on her services and enjoys each day to the fullest as she explores how to further improve her business. When I put my house in order, I discovered what I really wanted to do. These are words I hear frequently from my clients. For the majority, the experience of tidying causes them to become more passionately involved in their work. Some set up their own companies, others change jobs, and still others take more interest in their current profession. They also become more passionate about their other interests and about their home and family life. Their awareness of what they like naturally increases, and, as a result, daily life becomes more exciting. Although we can get to know ourselves better by sitting down and analyzing our characteristics or by listening to others' perspectives on us, I believe that tidying is the best way. After all, our possessions very accurately relate the history of the decisions we have made in life. Tidying is a way of taking stock that shows us what we really like. The magic effect of tidying. Up to now, I believed it was important to do things that added to my life, so I took seminars and studied to increase my knowledge. But through your course on how to put my space in order, I realized for the first time that letting go is even more important than adding. This comment was made by a client in her 30s who loved to study, and who had developed a vast network of contacts. Her life changed drastically after she took my course. The primary item she did not want to part with was her enormous collection of seminar notes and materials, but when she finally disposed of them, she felt as if a huge weight had been lifted from her. After getting rid of almost 500 books she had been intending to read someday, she found that she received new information daily. And when she discarded her huge stack of business cards, the people that she had been wanting to meet started calling her, and she was able to meet them quite naturally. Whereas before she had been into spirituality, when the course concluded, she said contentedly, "Tidying has far more effect than feng shui or power stones and other spiritual goods." Since then, she has leaped headlong into a new life, quitting her job and finding a publisher for her book. Tidying dramatically changes one's life. This is true for everyone, 100%. The impact of this effect, which I have dubbed the magic of tidying, is phenomenal. Sometimes I ask my clients how their lives have changed after taking the course. Although I have grown accustomed to their answers, in the beginning, even I was surprised. The lives of those who tidy thoroughly and completely, in a single shot, are without exception dramatically altered. The client I just described had been messy all her life. When her mother saw her room clutter-free, she was so impressed that she signed up for my course too. Although she believed herself to be a tidy person, the sight of her daughter's room convinced her that she was not. She came to enjoy discarding so much that she had no regrets about getting rid of her tea ceremony equipment, which had cost $250, and looked forward eagerly to trash and recycle pickup days. Previously, I had no confidence. I kept thinking that I needed to change, that I should be different. But now I can believe that I am okay just the way I am. By gaining a clear standard by which I can judge things, I gained a great deal of confidence in myself. As you can see from her testimony, one of the magical effects of tidying is confidence in your decision-making capacity. Tidying means taking each item in your hand, asking yourself whether it sparks joy, and deciding on this basis whether or not to keep it. By repeating this process hundreds and thousands of times, we naturally hone our decision-making skills. People who lack confidence in their judgment lack confidence in themselves. I too once lacked confidence. What saved me was tidying. Gaining confidence in life through the magic of tidying. I have come to the conclusion that my passion for tidying was motivated by a desire for recognition from my parents and a complex concerning my mother. Being the middle child of three siblings, I did not get much attention from my parents after the age of three. Of course, this was not intentional, but being sandwiched between my older brother and the youngest child, my little sister, I could not help but feel this way. My interest in housework and tidying began when I was about five, and I believe that I was trying in my own way not to make trouble for my parents, who were clearly busy taking care of my other two siblings. I also became conscious from a very young age of the need to avoid being dependent on other people. And, of course, I wanted my parents to praise and notice me. From the time I was a first grader, I used an alarm clock to wake up before everyone else. I did not like being dependent on others, found it hard to trust them, and was very inept at expressing my feelings. From the fact that I spent my recesses alone, tidying, you can guess that I wasn't a very outgoing child. I really enjoyed wandering around the school by myself, and I still prefer to do things alone, including traveling and shopping. This is very natural for me. Because I was poor at developing bonds of trust with people, I had an unusually strong attachment to things. I think that precisely because I did not feel comfortable exposing my weaknesses or my true feelings to others, my room and the things in it became very precious. I did not have to pretend or hide anything in front of them. It was material things in my house that taught me to appreciate unconditional love first, not my parents or friends. To tell the truth, I still don't have a lot of self-confidence. There are times when I am quite discouraged by my inadequacies. I do, however, have confidence in my environment. When it comes to the things I own, the clothes I wear, the house I live in, and the people in my life, when it comes to my environment as a whole, although it may not seem particularly special to anyone else, I am confident and extremely grateful to be surrounded by what I love, by things and people that are, each and every one, special, precious, and exceedingly dear to me. The things and people that bring me joy support me. They give me the confidence that I will be all right. I want to help others who feel the way I once did, who lack self-confidence and find it hard to open their hearts to others, to see how much support they receive from the space they live in and the things that surround them. This is why I spend my time visiting people's homes and instructing them in how to tidy. An attachment to the past or anxiety about the future. Discard anything that doesn't spark joy. If you have tried this method even a little, you have realized by now that it is not difficult to identify something that brings you joy. The moment you touch it, you know the answer. it is much more difficult to decide to discard something. We come up with all kinds of reasons for not doing it, such as, I didn't use this particular pot all year, but who knows, I might need it sometime. Or, that necklace my boyfriend gave me, I really liked it at the time. But when we delve into the reasons for why we can't let something go, there are only two: an attachment to the past, or a fear for the future. During the selection process, if you come across something that does not spark joy but that you just can't bring yourself to throw away, stop a moment and ask yourself, am I having trouble getting rid of this because of an attachment to the past, or because of a fear for the future? Ask this for every one of these items. As you do so, you'll begin to see a pattern in your ownership of things, a pattern that falls into one of three categories: attachment to the past, desire for stability in the future, or a combination of both. It's important to understand your ownership pattern because it is an expression of the values that guide your life. The question of what you want to own is actually the question of how you want to live your life. Attachment to the past and fears concerning the future not only govern the way you select the things you own, but also represent the criteria by which you make choices in every aspect of your life, including your relationships with people and your job. When a woman who is very anxious about the future chooses a partner, for example, she is less likely to select someone purely because she likes and enjoys being with him. She might choose someone she doesn't really like simply because the relationship seems advantageous to her, or because she is afraid that if she doesn't choose him, she may not find anyone else. When it comes to career choices, the same type of person is more likely to choose a job with a large company because it will give her more choices in the future, or to work towards certain qualifications as a guarantee rather than because she actually likes the work and wants to do it. A person who has a strong attachment to the past, on the other hand, finds it hard to move on to a new relationship because she can't forget the boyfriend she broke up with 2 years ago. She also finds it hard to try out new methods, even when the current method is no longer effective because it worked up to this point. When one or the other of these thought patterns makes it hard to throw things away, we can't see what we really need now, at this moment. We aren't sure what would satisfy us, or what we are looking for. As a result, we increase the number of unnecessary possessions, burying ourselves both physically and mentally in superfluous things. The best way to find out what we really need is to get rid of what we don't. Quests to faraway places or shopping sprees are no longer necessary. All you have to do is eliminate what you don't need by confronting each of your possessions properly. The process of facing and selecting our possessions can be quite painful. It forces us to confront our imperfections and inadequacies and the foolish choices we made in the past. Many times when confronting my past through the tidying process, I have been so ashamed I felt like my face was on fire. My collection of scented erasers from grade school, the animation-related trinkets that I collected in junior high school, clothes I bought in high school when I was trying to act grown up but that didn't suit me at all, handbags I bought even though I didn't need them just because I liked the look of them in the shop. The things we own are real. They exist here and now as a result of choices made in the past by no one other than ourselves. It is dangerous to ignore them or to discard them indiscriminately as if denying the choices we made. This is why I am against both letting things pile up and dumping things indiscriminately. It is only when we face the things we own one by one and experience the emotions they evoke that we can truly appreciate our relationship with them. There are three approaches we can take toward our possessions: face them now, face them sometime, or avoid them until the day we die. The choice is ours, but I personally believe it is far better to face them now. If we acknowledge our attachment to the past and our fears for the future by honestly looking at our possessions, we will be able to see what is really important to us. This process in turn helps us identify our values and reduces doubt and confusion in making life decisions. If we can have confidence in our decisions and launch enthusiastically into action without any doubts holding us back, we will be able to achieve much more. In other words, the sooner we confront our possessions, the better. If you are going to put your house in order, do it now. Learning that you can do without. Once people get down to really tidying, they produce bag after bag of garbage. I have heard that the participants in my courses often compare notes on how many bags they have thrown away, or share reports on what turned up in their house. The record number of garbage bags filled to date was by a couple who disposed of 200 bags worth of stuff, plus more than 10 items that were too large to put in bags. Most people laugh when they hear this, and imagine that the couple must have had a very large house with lots of storage room, but they are wrong. They lived in a very ordinary, two-story, four-room dwelling. It had slightly more floor area than many Japanese homes because it also had an attic, but the difference in space was not that great. Although there did seem to be a lot of things in view, the home did not appear at first glance to have that much garbage in it. In other words, any house has the potential to produce the same volume. When I have my clients sort through and get rid of their belongings, I don't stop halfway. The average amount discarded by a single person is easily 20 to 30 45-liter bags, and for a family of three it's closer to 70 bags. The sum total of all the garbage so far would exceed 28,000 bags, and the number of items discarded must be over 1 million. Yet despite the drastic reduction in their belongings, no one has ever complained that they had a problem later because I told them to get rid of something. The reason is very clear. Discarding those things that don't spark joy has no adverse effects whatsoever. When they finish tidying, all of my clients are surprised that they notice no inconvenience in their daily lives. It is a strong reminder that they have been living all this time surrounded by things that they don't need. There are no exceptions. Even clients who have less than a fifth of their possessions left at the end feel this way. Of course, I am not saying that my clients have never regretted discarding something. Far from it. You should expect this to happen at least three times during the tidying process, but don't let it worry you. Even though my clients have regretted parting with something, they never complain. They have already learned through experience that any problem caused by lack of something can be solved through action. When my clients relate the experience of getting rid of something they shouldn't have, they all sound extremely cheerful. Most of them laugh and say, "For a moment I thought I was in trouble, but then I realized it wasn't life-threatening." This attitude does not stem from an optimistic personality, nor does it mean they have become careless in their response to missing something. Rather, it shows that by selecting what to discard, they have changed their mindset. What if, for example, they need the contents of a document that they disposed of earlier? First, because they have already pared down the amount of documents they own, they can quickly confirm that they do not have it, without having to search all over. The fact that they do not need to search is actually an invaluable stress reliever. One of the reasons clutter eats away at us is because we have to search for something just to find out whether it's even there. And many times, no matter how much we search, we cannot seem to find what we are looking for. When we have reduced the amount we own and store our documents all in the same place, we can tell at a glance whether we have it or not. If it's gone, we can shift gears immediately and start thinking about what to do. We can ask someone we know, call the company, or look up the information ourselves. Once we have come up with a solution, we have no choice but to act. And when we do, we notice that the problem is often solved surprisingly easily. Instead of suffering from the stress of looking and not finding, we take action. And these actions often lead to unexpected benefits. When we search for the content elsewhere, we may discover new information. When we contact a friend, we may deepen that relationship, or he or she may introduce us to someone who is well-versed in the field. Repeated experiences like these teach us that if we take action, we will be able to obtain the necessary information when we need it. Life becomes far easier once you know that things will still work out, even if you are lacking something. There is another reason that my clients never complain about discarding things, and this is the most significant. Because they have continued to identify and dispense with things that they don't need, they no longer abdicate responsibility for decision-making to other people. When a problem arises, they don't look for some external cause or person to blame. They now make their own decisions and are aware that considering what action to take in any situation is what really matters. Selecting and discarding one's possessions is a continuous process of making decisions based on one's own values. Discarding hones one's decision-making skills. Isn't it a waste to squander the opportunity to develop this capacity by saving things? When I visit my clients' homes, I never throw anything away. I always leave the final decision up to them. If I choose what to discard for them, there would be no point in tidying. It is by putting one's own house in order that one's mindset is changed. Do you greet your house? The first thing I do when I visit a client's home is to greet their house. I kneel formally on the floor in the center of the house and address the house in my mind. After giving a brief self-introduction, including my name, address, and occupation, I ask for help in creating a space where the family can enjoy a happier life. Then I bow. It is a silent ritual that only takes about 2 minutes, but it does elicit some strange looks from my clients. I began this custom quite naturally based on the etiquette of worshipping at Shinto shrines. I don't remember exactly when I started doing it, but I believe I was inspired to do so because the tense expectancy in the air when a client opens the door resembles the atmosphere when one passes under a shrine gate and enters the sacred precincts. You may think that this ritual could only have a placebo effect, but I have noticed a real difference in the speed with which tidying occurs when I perform it. Incidentally, I don't wear sweats or work clothes when I tidy. Instead, I usually wear a dress and blazer. Although occasionally I don an apron, my priority is on design over practicality. Some clients are surprised and worry that I might ruin my clothes, but I have no trouble moving furniture, climbing onto kitchen counters, and doing the other active work involved in tidying while dressed up. This is my way of showing respect for the house and its contents. I believe that tidying is a celebration, a special send-off for those things that will be departing from the house, and therefore I dress accordingly. I am confident that when I show respect by the clothes I choose to wear and begin the work of tidying by greeting the house, it will in turn be happy to tell me what the family no longer needs and where to put the things remaining so that the family can be comfortable and happy in this space. This attitude speeds up decision-making at the storage stage and eliminates doubt from the entire tidying process so that everything flows more smoothly. Perhaps you don't believe that you could do this. Perhaps you think you have to be a professional like me to hear what the house has to say. In fact, however, the owners understand their possessions and their house the best. As we progress through the lessons, my clients begin to see clearly what they need to discard and where things naturally belong, and the tidying work proceeds smoothly and speedily. There is one fail-proof strategy to quickly hone your sense of what you need and where things belong. Greet your house every time you come home. This is the first homework assignment I give my clients at my private lessons. Just as you would greet your family or your pet, say, "Hello, I'm home," to your house when you return. If you forget when you walk in the door, then later, when you remember, say, "Thank you for giving me shelter." If you feel shy or embarrassed to say these things out loud, it is fine to say them silently in your mind. If you do this repeatedly, you will start to feel your house respond when you come home. You will sense its pleasure passing through like a gentle breeze. Then you will gradually be able to feel where it would like you to tidy and where it would like you to put things. Carry on a dialogue with your home while tidying. I know this sounds totally impractical and fantastic, but if you ignore this step, you will find that the job goes less smoothly. In essence, tidying ought to be the act of restoring balance among people, their possessions, and the house they live in. Conventional approaches to tidying, however, tend to focus solely on the relationship between people and their belongings and do not pay attention to their dwelling. I, however, am very conscious of the important role the house plays, because whenever I visit a client's home, I can feel how much it cherishes its inhabitants. It is always there, waiting for my clients to return and standing ready to shelter and protect them. No matter how exhausted they are after a long day's work, it is there to refresh and heal them. When they don't feel like working and wander around the house in their birthday suit, the home accepts them just as they are. You won't find anyone more generous or welcoming than this. Tidying is our opportunity to express our appreciation to our home for all it does for us. To test my theory, try putting your house in order from the perspective of what would make it happy. You will be surprised at how smoothly the decision-making process goes. Your possessions want to help you. I have spent more than half my life thinking about tidying. I visit people's homes every day and spend time confronting their possessions. I do not think there is any other profession in which I would be able to see everything a person owns, or examine the contents of closets and drawers, just as they are. Although I have visited many homes, naturally no one's possessions or any way of organizing is identical. Yet all these possessions share one thing in common. Think about why you have the things you do. If you answer, "Because I choose them," "Because I need them," or "Because of a variety of coincidences," all of these responses would be correct. But, without exception, all the things you own share the desire to be of use to you. I can say this with certainty because I have examined very carefully hundreds of thousands of possessions in my career as a tidying consultant. When examined carefully, the fate that links us to the things we own is quite amazing. Take just one shirt, for example. Even if it was mass-produced in a factory, that particular shirt that you bought and brought home on that particular day is unique to you. The destiny that led us to each of our possessions is just as precious and sacred as the destiny that connected us with the people in our lives. There is a reason why each one of your belongings came to you. When I share this perspective, some people say, "I neglected this outfit so long it's all wrinkled. It must be pretty indignant with me." Or, "If I don't use it, it will curse me." But from my own experience, I have never encountered any possession that reproached its owner. These thoughts stem from the owner's sense of guilt, not from the person's belongings. Then what do the things in our homes that don't spark joy actually feel? I think they simply want to leave. Lying forgotten in your closet, they know better than anyone else that they are not bringing joy to you now. Everything you own wants to be of use to you. Even if you throw it away or burn it, it will only leave behind the energy of wanting to be of service. Freed from its physical form, it will move about your world as energy, letting other things know that you are a special person, and come back to you as the thing that will be of most use to who you are now, the thing that will bring you the most happiness. A piece of clothing might come back as a new and beautiful outfit, or it may reappear as information or a new connection. I promise you, whatever you let go will come back in exactly the same amount, but only when it feels the desire to return to you. For this reason, when you part with something, don't sigh and say, "Oh, I never used this," or, "Sorry, I never got around to using you." Instead, send it off joyfully with words like, "Thank you for finding me," or, "Have a good journey. See you again soon." Get rid of those things that no longer spark joy. Make your parting a ceremony to launch them on a new journey. Celebrate this occasion with them. I truly believe that our possessions are even happier and more vibrant when we let them go than when we first get them. Your living space affects your body. Once the process of tidying is underway, many of my clients remark that they have lost weight or that they have firmed up their tummies. It's a very strange phenomenon, but when we reduce what we own and essentially detox our house, it has a detox effect on our bodies as well. When we discard everything in one go, which sometimes means disposing of 40 garbage bags of stuff in one day, our bodies may respond in a way that resembles a short fast. We may get a bout of diarrhea or break out in pimples. There is nothing wrong with this. Our bodies are just getting rid of toxins that have built up over the years, and they will be back to normal, or in fact in even better shape, within a day or two. One of my clients cleared out a closet and shed that she had neglected for 10 years. Immediately after, she had a strong bout of diarrhea, after which she felt much lighter. I know it sounds like false advertising to claim that you can lose weight by tidying, or that it will make your skin clearer, but it is not necessarily untrue. Unfortunately, I can't show you before and after pictures of my clients, but I have witnessed with my own eyes how their appearance changes when their rooms are tidied. Their figures are more streamlined, their skin is more radiant, and their eyes shine brighter. When I first started this business, I found this fact quite intriguing. But when I thought about it carefully, I realized that it isn't that strange. I think of it like this. When we put our house in order, the air inside becomes fresh and clean. Reducing the amount of stuff in our space also reduces the amount of dust, and we actually clean more often. When we can see the floor, the dirt stands out and we want to clean. Because clutter has been eliminated, it's much easier to clean, and therefore we do it more thoroughly. The fresher air in the room must certainly be good for the skin. Cleaning involves energetic movement, which would naturally contribute to losing weight and staying fit. And when our space is completely clean, we don't have to worry about tidying, so we are free to focus on the next issue that is important in our lives. Many people want to be slim and fit, and that becomes their focus. They start to walk longer distances and eat less junk food, and these actions contribute to weight loss without consciously dieting. But I think the main reason tidying has this effect is because through this process people come to know contentment. After tidying, many clients tell me that their worldly desires have decreased. Whereas in the past, no matter how many clothes they had, they were never satisfied and always wanted something new to wear. Once they selected and kept only those things that they really loved, they felt that they had everything they needed. We amass material things for the same reason that we eat, to satisfy a craving. Buying on impulse and eating and drinking to excess are attempts to alleviate stress. From observing my clients, I have noticed that when they part with excess clothing, their tummies tend to slim down. When they discard books and documents, their minds tend to become clearer. When they reduce the number of cosmetics and tidy up the area around the sink and bath, their complexion tends to become clear and their skin smooth. Although I have no scientific basis for this theory, it is very interesting to see that the part of the body responding corresponds closely to the area that is put in order. Isn't it wonderful that tidying your house can also enhance your beauty and contribute to a healthier, trimmer body? Is it true that tidying increases good fortune? Due to the popularity of feng shui, people often ask me whether tidying will bring them good fortune. Feng shui is a method for increasing good fortune by organizing one's living environment. It began gaining in popularity in Japan about 15 years ago and is now quite well known. For many people, feng shui is what first gets them interested in organizing and tidying their house. I am not a feng shui expert, but I did study the basics as part of my research on tidying. Whether or not you believe that it can improve your fortune is up to you, but since ancient times, people in Japan have been applying their knowledge of feng shui and orientation principles to their daily lives. I myself also apply the wisdom of our forebearers in my practice of tidying. For example, when I fold and stand clothes on edge in the drawer, I arrange them by color to form a gradation from dark to light. The proper order is to place clothes that are lighter in color at the front of the drawer and gradually progress to darker colors at the back. I don't know whether or not this increases good fortune, but when clothes are arranged in a gradation of color, it feels great to look at them whenever you open the drawer. For some reason, having lighter clothes at the front seems to have a calming effect. If you organize your living environment so that it feels comfortable and so that every day you feel energized and happy, wouldn't you say that your good fortune has increased? The concepts underpinning feng shui are the dual forces of yin and yang and the five elements: metal, wood, water, fire, and earth. The basic belief is that everything has its own energy and that each thing should be treated in a way that suits its characteristics. To me, this seems perfectly natural. The philosophy of feng shui is really about living in accordance with the rules of nature. The purpose of my approach to tidying is exactly the same. The true purpose of tidying is, I believe, to live in the most natural state possible. Don't you think it is unnatural for us to possess things that don't bring us joy, or things that we don't really need? I believe that owning only what we love and what we need is the most natural condition. By putting our house in order, we can live in our natural state. We choose those things that bring us joy and cherish what is truly precious in our lives. Nothing can bring us greater happiness than to be able to do something as simple and natural as this. If this is good fortune, then I am convinced that putting our house in order is the best way to achieve it. How to identify what is truly precious? After a client has finished the process of selecting what to keep and what to discard, there are times when I will retrieve a few things from the keep pile and ask once again, "This t-shirt and this sweater here, do they really spark joy?" With a look of surprise, my client inevitably says, "How did you know? Those are all things that I couldn't decide if I should keep or throw away." I am not a fashion expert, nor do I retrieve these things on the basis of how old they look. I can tell by my client's expression when they are choosing, the way they hold the item, the gleam in their eyes when they touch it, the speed with which they decide. Their response is clearly different for things they like and things they are not sure of. When faced with something that brings joy, their decision is usually instantaneous, their touch is gentle, and their eyes shine. When faced with something that doesn't bring them joy, their hands pause, and they cock their head and frown. After thinking for a few moments, they throw the item onto the keep pile. At that moment, there is a tightness in their brow and around their lips. Joy manifests itself in the body, and I don't let these physical signs escape me. To be honest, however, I can actually tell which items do not spark joy in my clients' hearts even without watching them during the selection process. Before I visit their homes, I give them a private lesson on the KonMari method. This lecture alone has a significant impact, and often when I make my first visit to their house, they have already begun tidying. One of my prize students, a woman in her 30s, had discarded 50 garbage bags of belongings by the time I got there. She opened her drawers and closet proudly and said, "There's nothing more to get rid of in here." Her room certainly looked different from the photographs she had shown me. The sweater that had been thrown carelessly over the dresser was now neatly stored away, and the dresses that had been jammed to bursting on the rod had been thinned out, so that now there was some room between them. Yet, even so, I pulled out a brown jacket and a beige blouse. They looked no different from the rest of the clothes she had decided to keep. Both were in good condition and looked like they had been worn. "Do these really bring you joy?" I asked. The expression on her face changed instantly. "That jacket. You know I love the design, but I really wanted one in black. They didn't have a black one in my size. Not having a brown jacket, I thought that I would buy it anyway, but in the end it just didn't seem to suit me and I only wore it a few times. As for the blouse, I was really attracted to the design and to the material, so I actually bought two of them. I wore the first one until it couldn't be worn, but for some reason I just don't seem to choose the second one anymore." I had never seen how she treated these items, nor did I know anything about the circumstances surrounding their purchase. All I did was observe carefully the clothes hanging in her closet. When you examine things closely, you can begin to discern whether or not those things bring their owner joy. When a woman is in love, the change in her is apparent to everyone around her. The love she receives from her partner, the confidence that love gives her, and her desire to make the effort to look beautiful for him all give her energy. Her skin glows, her eyes shine, and she becomes even more beautiful. In the same way, things that are loved by their owner and treated with care are vibrant and radiate an aura of wanting to be of more service to their owner. Things that are cherished shine. This is why I can tell at a glance whether something truly sparks joy. The genuine emotion of joy resides in the body and in the possessions of the owner, and therefore it can't be concealed. Being surrounded by things that spark joy makes you happy. Everyone has things that they love, things that they cannot imagine parting with, even though other people shake their heads in disbelief when they see them. I see the things that other people find precious every day, and you would be amazed at the strange and incomprehensible articles that capture people's hearts. A set of 10 finger puppets, each with one eye only and every eye different. A broken alarm clock shaped like the Morinaga Nubo character. A driftwood collection that looks more like a heap of scrap wood. But the immediate response to my hesitant, "Does this, really spark joy?" is an emphatic, "Yes!" There is no arguing with their confident gaze and shining eyes because I, too, have one such item. My Kikuro t-shirt. Kikuro, Forest Child, was one of the two official mascots for Aichi Expo 2005, which promoted love for the earth and renewable eco-friendly technology. The larger mascot, Morizo, is perhaps better known. Kikuro was Morizo's sidekick, a little lime-green roly-poly character, and my t-shirt shows only Kikuro's face. I wear it around the house all the time. It is one thing that I just cannot bring myself to part with, even if people were to ridicule me, saying, "How can you keep this? Aren't you embarrassed? How can you wear that? You should throw it away." Let me be clear. The clothes I wear at home are generally cute and pretty. I usually wear girly things, such as camisoles with layers of pink frills and flower print cotton ensembles, around the house. The only exception is my Kikuro t-shirt. It is quite a curious article, shocking green in color with just Kikuro's eyes and half-open, full-lipped mouth, and the tag clearly indicates that it's a children's size. As the expo was held in 2005, I've been wearing it for many years, even though I have no sentimental memories from the event itself. Just reading what I've written here makes me feel embarrassed to be hanging on to such a thing, yet whenever I see it, I can't bring myself to throw it away. My heart starts beating faster as soon as I see Kikuro's lovely round eyes. The contents of my drawers are organized so that I can see at a glance what's there. This t-shirt sticks out like a sore thumb among all my graceful feminine clothes, yet that just makes it more endearing. It's so old now, you would think that it would be stretched out of shape or stained. But it's not, so I can't find any excuse in that area for discarding it. The fact that the tag declares it was made in some other country even though it was a Japanese expo could have ruined its appeal for me, yet I still can't throw it away. These are the types of things you should boldly hang on to. If you can say without a doubt, "I really like this," no matter what anyone else says, and if you like yourself for having it, then ignore what other people think. To tell the truth, I would not want anyone else to see me wearing my Kikuro t-shirt. But I keep it for the little joys it gives me. The giggle I get when I take it out and look at it all on my own. The contentment I feel when Kikuro and I are sweating together as we clean and wondering what to tackle next. I can think of no greater happiness in life than to be surrounded only by the things I love. How about you? All you need to do is get rid of anything that doesn't touch your heart. There is no simpler way to contentment. What else could this be called but the magic of tidying? Your real life begins after putting your house in order. Although I have spent this entire book talking about tidying, tidying is not actually necessary. You won't die if your house isn't tidy, and there are many people in the world who really don't care if they can't put their house in order. Such people, however, would never pick up this book. You, on the other hand, have been led by fate to listen to it, and that probably means you have a strong desire to change your current situation. To reset your life, to improve your lifestyle, to gain happiness, to shine. For this very reason, I can guarantee that you will be able to put your house in order. The moment you picked up this book with the intention of tidying, you took the first step. If you have listened this far, you know what you need to do next. Human beings can only truly cherish a limited number of things at one time. As I am both lazy and forgetful, I can't take proper care of too many things. That is why I want to cherish properly the things I love. And that is why I have insisted on tidying for so much of my life. I believe, however, that it is best to tidy up quickly and get it over with. Why? Because tidying is not the purpose of life. If you think that tidying is something that must be done every day, if you think it is something that you will need to do all your life, it is time to wake up. I swear to you that tidying can be done thoroughly and quickly, all in one go. The only tasks that you will need to continue for the rest of your life are those of choosing what to keep and what to discard, and of caring for the things you decide to keep. You can put your house in order now, once and forever. The only ones who need to spend their lives, year in and year out, thinking about tidying are people like me who find joy in it, and who are passionate about using tidying to make the world a better place. As for you, pour your time and passion into what brings you the most joy, your mission in life. I am convinced that putting your house in order will help you find the mission that speaks to your heart. Life truly begins after you have put your house in order. Afterward. The other day I woke up to find my neck and shoulders frozen stiff. I could not even get out of bed and had to call an ambulance. Although the cause was not clear, I had spent the previous day at a client's house, looking into the cupboard above the closet and moving heavy furniture. As I had not done anything else, the conclusion was that I had tidied too much. I must be the only patient to ever have "too much tidying" written on her medical record. Even so, as I lay in bed slowly regaining motion in my neck, 90% of my thoughts were about tidying. This experience made me appreciate the ability to look up into cupboards. I wrote this book because I wanted to share the magic of tidying. The deep emotions in my heart when sending off things that have fulfilled their purpose, emotions much like those experienced at a graduation, the thrill I feel at the click of fate when something finds where it is meant to be, and, best of all, the fresh, pure air that fills a room after it has been put in order. These are the things that make an ordinary day, with no special event, that much brighter. I would like to take this opportunity to thank all those who supported me in writing this book when all I am really capable of is tidying. Mr. Takahashi of Sunmark Publishing. My family. All my possessions. My home. I pray that through the magic of tidying, more people will be able to experience the joy and contentment of living surrounded by the things they love. Marie Konmari Kondo. This concludes The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up by Marie Kondo. Narrated by Emily Wuzeller. Copyright 2014 by Marie Kondo. This unabridged audiobook is recorded by arrangement with Crown Publishers, an imprint of the Crown Publishing Group, a division of Random House LLC, and was produced in the year 2015 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers, or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalog.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.